Daniel Mendelsohn turns up in the pages of The New Yorker from time to time, but he's also got his hands full as a teacher at Bard College. He's a scholar of the classics. And one of the classes he teaches regularly is a freshman seminar on Homer's ancient epic, The Odyssey.
A man. Track his tale for me, Muse, the twisty one who wandered widely once he'd sacked Troy's holy citadel. He saw the cities of many men and knew their minds, and suffered deeply in his soul upon the sea, try as he might to protect his life and the day of his men's return. But he could not save his men, although he longed to, for they perished through their own recklessness, fools who ate of the cattle of Hyperion, the sun, and so they lost the day of their return. From some point or another, daughter of Zeus, tell us the tale.
A few years ago, Professor Mendelsohn had a guest auditing his Odyssey seminar, but not your average undergrad, but a retired computer scientist, an octogenarian whom the other students addressed as Mr. Mendelsohn. What was it like to have him in class? I mean, you're sitting there with fresh-faced 17 and 19-year-olds, and then there's this guy at the end of the table, rather older, and your father. What was it like?
It was interesting in two ways. So the first way was that, of course, there were comical moments. I think the students, remember, this is a freshman seminar. We met once a week for 2.5 hours. And they were, I think, very excited by the fact that there was somebody in the room who had more authority than I did, sort of ex officio, you know, that he just, so they never knew quite where to turn when we were talking about things because he was lurking in the back. He would take the train to and from Bard from Long Island, and a lot of the kids go down to the city, and he had developed relationships with some of them sitting on the train.
Was where he dating would feed any of them?
He was feeding them his theories about the Odyssey, you know, so it was kind of cute, actually. But really, the thing that was very interesting about that experience was my father was a literate person and a great reader, but he was not a literature person. And so he didn't have the sort of reflexive responses to this quote-unquote great work of literature. And of course, the joke of the semester became that he really didn't like Odysseus. And he kept hammering at me all through the semester.
Because that he's not a hero.
He didn't think he was a hero.
Why was
from
that?
The very first day. He didn't like him because he's a liar. And as he said, he cheats on his wife. And he sleeps with all these beautiful goddesses. And Odysseus is beloved of people like me, because he is a fabulist. He's a great storyteller. He's a great bullshitter. That's how he keeps prevailing. He makes up lies. He tells tall tales. And we think that's wonderful. My father, you know, who is a mathematician, where X always has to equal X, he just didn't understand what was supposed to be so appealing about this guy.
What was your relationship with your father like? How was it? It seems from reading you that there were distances.
Yeah. There were distances. I mean, I think I always felt that my father would disapprove of me somehow. I mean, he was in many ways a tough character, an incredibly high standard, rigid standards for behavior, for intellectual achievement. He pushed us very hard, and we were not close until I was in my late 20s and I went to graduate school.
And what was the breakthrough?
Well, the breakthrough was being in graduate school, actually. I think there was something about the difficulty of the classical languages and the rigorousness and their complexity that appealed to him intellectually. And
it didn't seem whiffy. It seemed like it is truly demanding.
Right. It was really, well, you know, if you look at it, when you study Greek and Latin, there are grammars, there are paradigms, there are syntaxes of incredible complexity, and they're sort of mathy ultimately. Mm-hmm. And I think he loved that.
At some point during the course, you decide at the suggestion of the great Froma Zeitlin, your mentor at Princeton as a classics professor. Froma Zeitlin said to you, why don't you take him on one of those Odyssey tours that you see advertised in the back of magazines here or there and go on a cruise with your father? How did you convince him to do it?
Well, it was actually interesting because my father was a real depression child, and actually, I still remember I was open-mouthed. He paid for a very luxurious cabin with a balcony and all kinds of things. And I thought, okay.
He went first
class.
He's
mellowed. He wanted to go first class. Yeah.
And the conceit is that it, quote-unquote, brings the poem alive. Does it?
Well, that was a question that my father and I discussed a lot. And, you know, it is interesting, of course, to see these places. It's something to stand on the windy plains of Troy and the sandy shores of Pylos. And, of course, it's just intellectually interesting. But the poem is the poem. The poem, as all great works do, creates its own reality. And at the end, my father, I think, in a sort of nice way, felt that the poem's presentation of it was more exciting than the actual place.
One of the most moving moments is you get to the cave of the nymph Calypso, who held Odysseus hostage for many years, and it's a real cave.
Oh, yeah.
Most of the time, you as a younger man, a man of still in the blush of vigor, is helping your 81-year-old dad along, and it's exhausting for him.
Yeah.
But when you get to this cave, something different happens.
So we went to Malta, which is the location of this cave, which is traditionally said to be the cave of Calypso. And they asked who wanted to go down into this cave. And I said no, because I'm extremely claustrophobic. And I don't care how many nights Odysseus spent in the cave. I had no desire to see it. You go out onto this sort of rocky outcrop, and you look down, and there's this cave which looks like a 3-foot-wide opening in a cliff face. I mean, it was absolutely terrifying. And my father insisted that I go down, and I said no, and we had a big argument. And then he said he would hold my hand, and I was just blown away by that, because I don't think I'd held my father was not a physically demonstrative person, to say the least. And I let him hold my hand, and we went down, and I was hyperventilating and thought I was going to have a heart attack.
Wow.
But we did it. And of course, everyone thought I was holding his hand because he was the 81-year-old and I was the 51-year-old, and no one ever knew that he was actually the one who was helping me.
What are you learning about him along the way on this cruise?
Well, one of the, you know, it's a very Odyssean lesson. The Odyssey is very interested in multiple identities. Odysseus famously is great at disguises and tricks and lies. And a question that the Odyssey keeps asking is, how do you know who you are if you are good at pretending to be other people? And one of the things I saw was a different face of my father on the cruise. He was a self I had not had much access to in my own life. I always knew him as my father, this kind of stern, hard-to-please person in many ways. Then on the cruise, he was so relaxed. He was so gallant. Everyone loved him. You know, people – it was very funny for me because at the end of the cruise, on the last day, the crew had a sort of farewell event where they had a slideshow of pictures they had been secretly taking of all the passengers throughout the cruise. And when my father's picture came on the screen, everyone applauded wildly.
He was the star of the cruise.
He was the star of the cruise. It was really touching. So he sort of showed me a self that had been largely hidden, I think, in his life with us. And it made me wonder who he was. And it's a very Odyssean question.
Now, you have children of your own with a female friend.
Mm-hmm.
And they're now 17 and 21.
Right.
How did this experience change, if at all, change your view of your own self as a father figure?
Well, I think, you know, we're always rethinking our parenting in relation to things we learn about our parents. I think it made me worry that I, or wonder at best, it made me wonder whether I was doing the same thing that he had done of showing a self to my children that I did not show to other people. It made me very conscious of that. Hmm. You know, I wondered, why was my father never so relaxed and expansive around us? Was it us? Was it something I didn't know about? Was it just the way he was? But I think about that a lot now, and I don't want my children to have that experience 30 years from now, I don't think. That there was some secret me that they never got to see.
Did it change the way you behave with them?
Yeah, I think to some extent. Absolutely.
Then eventually you got back to Athens, back to the airport, you flew home, and you thought you would have a transformed relationship in some way with your father. But in fact, he got sick very quickly thereafter, within a year, and died.
Yeah. He had a very serious stroke from which he never recovered, and he died a few months later.
Did it help you absorb the inevitable? Or did you somehow take that terrible end in a different way, do you think, for having gone through this poem with him, with having gone through the trip?
Well, what I felt was that we talked so much on this cruise. We had many late-night conversations stimulated by these different episodes of the Odyssey about deep and big subjects. And I think the great gift that I got out of this was that when my father really got sick, I felt that we had said everything we needed to say. So the Odyssey, you know, served me in this wonderful way because it became the vehicle for a final adventure with my father that was emotional as well as about the Odyssey or the cruise. I mean, we really got to hash things out, and I've never said to myself, if only I had said this, or if only I had had a chance to say that. We did it. And so I was the beneficiary of this amazing experience, and I think he was too. Here, at this bay, the Phaeacian crew put in. They'd known it long before. Driving the ship so hard, she ran onto the beach for a good half her length, such way the oarsmen brawny arms had made. Up from the benches, swinging down to land, first they lifted Odysseus off the decks, linen and lustrous carpets too, and laid him down on the sand asleep, still dead to the world. Then hoisted out the treasures that the proud Phaeacians, urged by open-hearted Pallas, had lavished on him, setting out for home. They heaped them all by the olive's trunk in a neat pile, clear of the road for fear some passerby might spot and steal Odysseus's hoard before he could awaken. Then, pushing off, they pulled for home themselves.
Daniel Mendelsohn, reading from the Odyssey. He wrote about the trip he took with his father in The New Yorker, and you can find that piece at newyorkerradio.org. He's got a book coming out on the subject later this year.